from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in North Kensington, West London, on June 14th, 2017. A fire broke out in the 24-story Greenfell Tower, a building filled with apartment flats. The fire started just before 1 in the morning, and it would kill 72 people and leave hundreds homeless, injured, and dealing with devastation. Now, the fire was the worst residential fire in the UK since the Second World War. After the fire, people around the world donated to a survivors fund, and it raised roughly $25 million. That's a common occurrence after a disaster. Communities donate generously. But what happens to the money? Well, months later, almost none of the money collected for fire survivors had been allocated. It's been a mess. The Charity Commission recently performed a study and found that millennials give more generously while also studying charities more carefully. More than half of adults between the ages of 18 and 24 will check out a charity before donating. Over the age of 75, less than a third of adults inquire about a charity before giving. And so that's how it kind of goes. The younger the adults are, the more likely they check it out, and it's a sliding scale as we get older, the less we vet things. It can be difficult to decide which cause is the best use of charitable dollars. Give locally or give globally? Maybe you think you don't have much to give, but can you pool your resources with friends or coworkers? These are the kinds of questions being asked by Next Gen Rochester, a young professional giving circle. They've got an event next week to talk about this hour, and we're also going to explore how we decide where and what we want to give to. In studio, we're going to welcome our panel now. Andrew Brady is the person, of course, behind this. Well, he's just one of the people. He's co-founder and co-chair at Conscious Capitalism Rock and vice chair for NextGen. Nice to have you back here. And do me a favor, before we introduce everybody else, just make sure our audience knows what exactly NextGen is.
Yeah, so NextGen Rochester is a young philanthropic giving circle. It's part of the Community Foundation. And for us as young professionals, you know, we may not feel like our donation is going to be big enough to make a large impact. Although it's true that every dollar counts, you know, it can feel like if we can pool our money together to give grants, that it could be a little bit more powerful. And so kind of at the intersection of both millennials being maybe more discerning with their philanthropy, but then also this kind of crowdfunding movement, that's really where NextGen is. So we bring our pool our money together and give out grants every year. We have an RFP process, and organizations put in for projects of up to $2,500 grants. And then we'll actually get it down to 8 or 10 organizations. And when we have it down to 8 or 10, they will come to our community showcase, which, as you mentioned, is this coming Monday at Jiva at 5:30. And anyone, even if you're not a member, you can come and just see. It's one of my favorite days of the year. You see all these inspiring people doing incredible work for the community and probably organizations that aren't as well known that you may not know too much about. So only the members that have given up to $100 to this giving circle can actually vote on where the money's going to go. But anybody can come, and I promise you'll be inspired, and you probably will even be inspired to become a member for the future.
All right, so that's Monday, Jiva, 5:30?
You got it.
Okay. Daphne Pariser is founder and president of Humans for Education. Daphne, welcome.
Thank you.
What is Humans for Education?
Humans for Education is a nonprofit that really focuses on helping schools get the resources that they need. But instead of providing the resources, we help them build small businesses so that they can forever have the money that they need to provide those resources for their children, like textbooks and better food and those sorts of things.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about what Daphne does and her views on charitable giving coming up here. Also, hello to Devin Reynolds, who is co-owner of Brothers and Sisters Unisex Salon and the founder of Brothers and Sisters Communiversity.
Communiversity.
Oh, I practiced this. Communiversity. I love that term. Devin, welcome. Tell us a little bit about what Brothers and Sisters Communiversity is.
Brothers and Sisters Communiversity is a collection of skilled individuals in our community that come together, and we do free apprenticeship programs, free workshop for the kids, so electricians, plumbers, barbering. We set up a workshop and do a one-on-one or like a little classroom seminar for the youth to try to get them influenced into a skill or a trade to pursue when they get older.
All right, we'll talk more about that as we go. And Dan Schneiderman's here, who is co-chair of Maker Faire Rochester and the co-vice dean of the Awesome Foundation. That's a philanthropic crowdfunding organization that just opened a chapter in Rochester. Dan, welcome. Tell us about the Awesome Foundation.
So the Awesome Foundation is this way to basically give $1,000 every other month to a project that, you know, gives back to the community one way or another. and it has to be awesome. It has to be really out there.
Like, what's an example?
So the first grantee that we gave was this guy in Rochester who's making a half-scale version of the Lunar Lander to bring around Rochester next year in honor of the 50th anniversary of the moon landing.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty...
It's pretty awesome.
I guess it's pretty awesome. So there's a brief look here. Andrew, how did you find these folks? I mean, who's the most deserving of charitable dollars on Monday?
Wow. Well, I actually
are they competing? Is this like going to be
No. So with NextGen, I didn't want to bring anyone that was going to be presenting because I wouldn't have been able to choose between the eight finalists that we have. But these are just, you know, there are so many young people trying to give back in different ways. And, you know, I've been on here thanks to you talking about conscious capitalism. So sometimes it's how can businesses be, you know, more discerning in the ways that they're giving back? And then how can we as consumers also think about, you know, what organizations we're supporting? You know, Daphne gives great examples of how things are happening in, you know, other countries. So I wanted to make sure that we brought in not just the local bent, because that's often where NextGen is focused, but think as well about the global impact that we're having.
Okay, so let me ask all of our panelists what they think about just how if they're giving money charitably, what goes through their mind, how they decide. It can be overwhelming. There are so many great causes and so many important causes, so much need in the world. And as I look at this study that I mentioned off the top here, the Charity Commission says, at least the younger we are, the more we do vet things. Listeners, I'd love to hear from you. What's your method or your process in understanding how you decide to give? 844-295-TALK. If you want to call the program, it's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. That's the number to call the show. I'll give you the separate number if you want to call and give to WXXI if you want. But that's the number to call the show. You can also email the program connections@WXXI.org. Andrew Brady, I'll start with you there. How much of a charity vetter are you, and how much do you look at that study and say, yep, the younger we are very keen on that?
It's certainly something that I do and that many of the people that I know are also really interested in, you know, like, for example, with NextGen, you know, we go through a whole RFP process and then we have these presentations at the community showcase where the organizations are talking about what they're actually going to do with the money, and people really want to see where specifically that money's going and what their contribution is going to have. And so I think that becomes really important. And then, you know, thinking, again, beyond just your charitable donations, but thinking about the businesses that you support and those sorts of things. One thing that I will recommend for people who are interested, there's a great book by Will McCaskill called Doing Good Better, where there's actually this entire what they're calling an effective altruism movement, where they're trying to measure the impact of dollars. And, you know, one of the things that I always personally am struggling with, because a lot of the research, you know, that they talk about shows how when you're going to developing countries, you know, the dollar goes a lot farther and it can have a greater impact if you're in terms of, you know, lives saved or whatever kind of metrics you're using. And so it is always, it's a difficult balance to want to certainly give back to your community, but also want to have an impact on a global scale.
Okay. Daphne, how do you view that question?
Well, I think of it in a few different ways. My whole background is as a scientist, so I actually am really, really interested in the impact and the data. So how are these nonprofits collecting their data, and how are they actually using the dollars? So I don't mind if they use 10, 20% of the money for administration, that's fine. But as long as they're actually setting out, they have a goal, I can go onto their website and really understand that goal easily by looking at it and reading it. I don't need to go out and talk to somebody to make that decision. So they should have it easily accessible for me. They should have a great presence on social media, and they should really have that data readily available.
Okay, and how often do you find the data is readily available?
Not often enough. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So actually, one of the biggest things that my nonprofit does, actually the first thing that we did, was set up how we were going to collect data. And to do that, I went to a bunch of different nonprofits, which I'm not going to say their names, and to ask them how to do that. And it surprised me that some of these nonprofits who were 10, 15 years old weren't collecting data at all. So I didn't understand how they were measuring their impact. But now I think that nonprofits are faced with a much bigger challenge because millennials expect that you have data, that you provide data, that you show how you're making an impact.
Okay, absolutely. I mean, I think that's right. I want to make sure I understand. Let's put your founder hat on here for Humans for Education.
Okay.
I'm thinking about making a contribution.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me. If I were to bump into you at a coffee shop and we're talking, you do this? This is so cool. What kind of need do you have? Do you have needs in the 6 figures, 7 figures, 10 figures? What kind of need do you have?
Oh, totally. Yeah. So the way that we structure it is based on the donor needs, right? If a donor can give a 6-figure gift, we have the ability to explain that type of impact that they could have. And at the same time, like what Andrew is saying, the fact that we could have somebody who can only give $200, if somebody gave me $200 right now, we could buy a cow. That cow would then generate 20% return on investment for the next several years for a school, which would then allow that school to have better food, lots of textbooks, all these sorts of things that they need.
Okay, where?
In Kenya.
Okay, all in Kenya.
This
right.
is all in Kenya currently. That's
okay.
Right.
And what if I could give $500? What if I give $1,000?
It depends on what you're interested in. Do you want to do a feeding program? Do you want to have dental work? Or are you interested in the revenue generating program? So it's really specific to our donors. So one of the things that I think is really important in terms of nonprofits is listening to what people actually want to give towards. So if you wanted to give $1,000, we could basically implement an entire wash program, which is water filters, hand washing, and menstrual pads for 250 kids.
Mm-hmm. And how do we know that the money is going there, and how much overhead are we talking? How much administrative cost?
We have zero administrative cost.
How
right
is that
now.
Possible?
It's because everyone is volunteer, but we do have one specific donor who does cover all of our administrative costs at this moment. That is not going to be the plan long term, and it is not feasible for nonprofits to work like that.
Okay.
It is really important that they have plans to ensure that administrative costs are covered.
So let me say, that's very transparent of you to say so.
Okay.
And I mean that, you know, sort of sincerely, because the term administrative costs is, mm-hmm. is quite a pejorative when we talk about charitable.
Yes.
But there have to be administrative costs,
yep.
especially the larger we go, generally speaking. So we'll pull it back to local in a second, but I want to stay on this thread here. What's
okay.
realistic for administrative costs? And when you're thinking mm-hmm. about other organizations, how much is too much? How do you decide what's too much? Because I imagine in some cases 5% would be reasonable, and others 20% might be reasonable. I don't know.
And I think that that's really, in my opinion, a case-by-case basis, because it depends on what you're doing, right? So right now we have zero administrative costs because a lot of the things that we do, we just have volunteers who can do it. But in the future, we project that our administrative costs will be closer to 10 to 15%. And so I think what is more important to me is if I see that somebody has a 20% administrative cost, then, okay, what are you using that cost for? Is it all really going to salaries, or are you using it for other things that are actually, you know, that are really benefiting the programs? Are all of these people who you are giving salaries to, are every single one of them necessary? And, you know, so really, how are you using it properly?
Okay. And then before I move on to grill Devin and Dan in the same way here, I want to read to you from a piece from Vox.com
mm-hmm.
titled, "These Are the Charities Where Your Money Will Do the Most Good."
Mm-hmm.
And Dylan Matthews wrote the piece. I'm not reading this just to sort of boost Daphne's work, and I'm not doing this to denigrate local charity, because in a moment we're going to talk about why local is absolutely important, but Vox writes the following, quote, "It's really hard to adequately express how much richer developed nations like the U.S. are than developing ones like Kenya, Uganda, and other countries targeted by GiveWell's most effective charities. We still have extreme poverty in the living on $2 a day cents, but it's comparatively pretty rare and hard to target effectively here. Giving to charities domestically is admirable, of course, but if you want to get the most bang for your buck in terms of saving lives, reducing illness, or improving overall well-being, you're going to want to give abroad. GiveWell actually looked into a number of U.S. charities, like the Nurse Family Partnership Program for Infants, the KIPP chain of charter schools, and the HOPE Job Training Program. It found that all were highly effective, but were far more cost-intensive than the best foreign charities. KIPP and the Nurse Family Partnership cost more than $10,000 per child served, while deworming programs like SCI's and Deworm the World generally cost between 25 cents and $1 per child treated. Do you generally agree with that sort of overall view that, you know, giving domestically is admirable but not as always efficient for your charitable dollars?
Yes, I get this question all the time. And so people always ask me, well, why don't you have this program here in the States? And I ask them, what do they think it would cost to build a school here in the U.S.? And to build a school out in Kenya, it costs us about $20,000, right? And you can't do that here in the U.S. You can't build the programs that we build out there for the amount of money that we do it. And just as an example to for the listeners and for you guys, the last time I was in Kenya, we were on our way to buy cattle in Tanzania, and we came across this woman whose child looked really ill. So we picked her up, and we were bringing her to the hospital, and the kid is going in and out of consciousness on the way there. Turns out the kid had cerebral malaria, which is very deadly for children under the age of five. This kid was 1 year old. So we're sitting in the emergency room, and this, which is a shack in the middle of nowhere, and this mother just starts bawling tears, and it was going to cost $7 to treat this kid, and she didn't have the money. So I called up two donors who had literally given $5 the day before and asked if we could use that money for them. And they got all the injections they needed, and the woman still calls us to this day to tell us how that child is doing. And so we were able to save a life with actually $7.
That is amazing. Andrew Brady.
Yeah, so one of the things that GiveWell that you mentioned is part of the effective altruism movement, and one of the examples that they give is that, you know, it takes about $40,000 to train a seeing eye dog. You know, a very, very something that is needed in a lot of cases. But at the same time, there are surgeries that can be performed that can give sight back to blind people or prevent certain diseases that will make their vision go away. And for that same $40,000, you can, I forget the exact number, but hundreds, on the order of hundreds of lives that can be touched. And so it does become very difficult. Now, at the same time, it's tough because you see the things that are going on in your local community. And so sometimes that's more where your focus is. And so I certainly would never, say anything about anybody who wants to give locally, but it is just something to keep in mind. And then the other thing about the administrative costs, there's a great TED talk by a guy named Dan Pallotta that is called "The Way We Think About Charity Is Dead Wrong." And his example, he was like a marketing guy for nonprofit organizations. And say he raised, again, I don't know the exact numbers, but say he raised like $30 million, but he cost $1 million. And so they said, oh, the administrative costs are too high, and they cut his organization. And then the next year, they only raised like $1 million or $2. And so if you're thinking about the actual good that you're able to do, administrative costs may not always be the right way.
So I got an email from a listener named Rachel who just says, Evan, I'm heading off to work, but I wanted to weigh in and say that I use Charity Navigator, which has comprehensive overviews of most groups except for religious organizations who have next to no transparency. But many people get hung up on CEO salaries, and in a book called A Path Appears, they make the point that a good organization needs competent leadership to make them effective, and they cannot attract good people without decent compensation. Mm-hmm. So evaluate a group based on what they accomplish, not just the money they spend to have good administration. Mm-hmm. Similar point there. You agree with that, Andrew?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I think as we turn to our other guests here, I'll just say Daphne Pariser, who's founder and president of Humans for Education. I'm amazed at what you're doing. That's really, really great stuff.
Thanks.
And hearing these stories can actually, if you're really a charitable person, it can actually be kind of paralyzing because you're going to hear Daphne's story, then you're going to hear local stories, then you're going to hear this group's doing this and this group, and you may actually get paralyzed and think, I can't do it all. Mm-hmm. So in our second half hour, we'll talk about bundling. We'll talk about, again, part of the purpose of what's going on Monday night and what Andrew's organization and I just made it's all your organization now, Andrew Brady.
Far
Next
from true,
is all yours.
But I appreciate it.
but we're going to talk about bundling and coming together to do that. But I also feel like you have to get to a point, Daphne, where you think, I am going to be as charitable as I can be. I'm going to accept that I'm going to hear about amazing things and I can't contribute to all of them. Mm-hmm. And I am going to try to not let that wear me down. But that's, these stories, $7 for life-saving treatment and you're still hearing from that mother in Kenya, it just blow you away.
And actually, one of the things is I feel like you shouldn't be, if you pick 2, 3, 4 organizations that are really close to you and you donate to them frequently, you shouldn't be you know, upset that you can't donate to the fifth one, because there is so much good that is happening now. There is more good that happens today than there has ever been in human history. And so even if you can't do that fifth one, at least you're still doing, you know, four of them, and somebody else is going to help pick up the slack.
Absolutely. Where are you online with your organization, by the way?
We have officially raised $60,000. Oh,
no, sorry. No, the website. I want to know what the website is.
Sorry. www.humansforeducation.org.
I love that you're so transparent that you're literally about to give me your full financial right here.
Oh, it's all
tell me what you've raised. I want to know everything.
It's all online. You can go see everything.
That's how it should be.
Yeah.
Good for you. Humansforeducation.org.
Yes, that's right.
Is the website. Mm-hmm. Keith in Farmington wants to weigh in on what he's heard so far. Go ahead, Keith.
Just got to ask him a question, but let me preface this.
Hold on, Keith. Are you calling from a tornado? What's going on there?
No, Evan, for this show, I went out and bought a new truck with Bluetooth, and it sounds that bad?
It does not sound very good, but you know, it could be user error. Go ahead. I can hear you.
No, I have a set of AirPods. If you want, I'll call you back on the AirPods.
Call me back on the AirPod. We'll take your call, and thank you,
okay.
Keith. The guy buys a Bluetooth just for connections. It's not working out very well. But that's a dedicated caller. Thank you, Keith. I'm going to turn to Devin Reynolds, who is co-owner of Brothers and Sisters Unisex Salon, mm-hmm. and founder of Brothers and Sisters Communiversity. And you founded it when, by the way? How long has it existed?
It's been up and running for a year.
And I'm going to make you get that mic and almost attach it to your mouth.
I'm sorry.
There you go.
Okay.
Thank you, Deb. What made you decide to do it? Take me through the story of how it came together.
Well, it's basically a pragmatic approach to what's going on in our community, the community that I serve and that I live in. So what we have going on is a couple of initiatives. We fight on a couple of different home fronts.
Okay.
So we do health and awareness and holistic awareness. So we do free yoga on Sundays, high blood pressure screenings, pass out contraceptives, and give sexual education pamphlets. And we also do Cut the Hunger, where we go to homeless shelters and we cut the hair, bring canned foods and non-perishable items. We have a food pantry that we do at the salon itself, 7 days a week. And that's all community-based grassroots giving.
Where are you located?
Dewey Avenue, 1274 Dewey Avenue, right here in Rochester, New York. We don't really collect monetary donations at all. All we ask is for the supply itself. So we do a back-to-school drive, free haircuts, backpacks.
Who's doing the haircuts?
School supply. We do. I do.
You doing the haircuts?
I own. It's a unisex salon. I'm a master barber. Master barber.
Good for you.
And owner.
Just to interject here, I just saw one of these shared viral videos of someone, I think in L.A., a guy who does like haircuts for super celebrities,
mm-hmm.
and does them now for shelters, because so often people who have been homeless,
mm-hmm.
You know, if they're trying to do anything in life, mm-hmm. get a job, move forward in life, etc. Obviously, when you've been homeless, you don't have resources. It can be tough. Mm-hmm. Your self-image can be tough. The way society judges mm-hmm. you can be tough. So he's doing haircuts and, you know, styling them all up, and it's cool
to
see how they feel.
It plays into the mental illness.
Exactly.
That plagues.
So it sounds like you're doing something, you know.
Similar, yeah.
Similar to that.
We go into the schools, do free haircuts for picture days, stuff like that. So.
And you said you go to shelters as well?
Yeah, shelters too. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so. I love what you do. Okay.
Thank
That's
you.
Good. That's good. But you're looking for, generally, you do the haircuts and you're looking also for supplies.
Yeah, we usually look for supplies. So like the food drive, we don't ask for money. We ask for canned foods. Donate the canned foods. Donate the bottled water. So you know exactly where it's going to. It's not like I could do a lot with a whole bunch of corn.
I got you.
Know?
And what's the goal here? I mean, eventually...
Basically, it's to build camaraderie. What we try to do in our full focus of the community and the salon work is to build an economy within our community. And first, to build an economy, you have to unite and you have to build camaraderie. And we have to get... raise the consciousness to a point where you want to be self-dependent, self-involved, and socially aware, and to make the businesses more socially responsible and socially aware. We have a lot of businesses that come into the community, and they pluck the fruit. They take all the money, but they won't get on their knees and pluck the weeds and help and, you know, do things that's for the demographics of people that come and shop with them and give them their riches. So basically, we just trying to spread love. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it could generate the interest of wanting more, wanting to own the businesses that's in your community, wanting to own the homes. Because basically, in a sense, we're just refugees. We don't own the homes, we don't own the businesses, and we're just occupying space. So mm-hmm. we're just trying to change the paradigm, not for my generation, but for my kids. I have two sons. So either I'm going to start today, and we could end the conversation that they've been having for hundreds of years, and it could be another 100-year conversation if we don't, you know, put any effort into it, or we can start today and it could be 99 years and 364 days ago. We could just try to raise us up out of a consumer class, basically, you know, and be owners, sure. to have pride and take back and be like every other nation that's striving.
Are you online? Can people find you online?
I don't have a website. You can... Brothers and Sisters on Facebook.
Somebody listening right now is going to offer to build you a website.
Yeah, Brothers and Sisters on Facebook. I got an Instagram too, Brothers and Sisters on Instagram. But we really, really like a grassroots.
Okay, so how do people find you if they want to contribute to what you're doing?
I can give them my email, or they usually just look us up.
Brothers and Sisters,
yep, Unisex Salon.
Unisex Salon on Dewey Avenue.
Yeah, on Dewey Avenue.
Brothers and Sisters, Unisex Salon. And you're hearing Devin, who's the co-owner, and he's the man behind it.
Yeah, I won an ESL Thomas Jefferson Award for the community activism I do this year. A couple of Democratic Chronicle articles. We have a Thanksgiving. We have a Thanksgiving dinner.
So you just look like you got hit by lightning.
Yeah, because I almost forgot. almost wrapped it up. So we have a Thanksgiving dinner that we do every year. This is our fourth annual Cut the Hunger Thanksgiving dinner that we do. We're doing it at St. Luke's Tabernacle on Thanksgiving from 4 to 7. We have a turkey drive that we have going on as well, and our goal is 75 turkeys. What we do is we do a food drive during Thanksgiving as well. So we bag up the non-perishable items and the groceries that we got, and we try to give a turkey and the non-perishable items so families could prepare the meal at home.
Okay, so but when do you need to distribute those turkeys? When are you going to do that?
Oh, we do that on the 20th, 2 days before Thanksgiving.
All right, so if I'm going to I'm going to take a turkey to your salon. Is that what I'm going to do?
Yes, we have freezers. We have a food pantry at the salon, so we have refrigerators.
Of course you
freezers.
Do.
Yeah.
I'm taking a turkey, and I'll tell you what. I'll tell you right now, my son and I are taking a turkey to you on Dewey Avenue.
Appreciate it.
Okay?
Appreciate it.
And you need 75 is the goal?
Yeah, 75 is the goal. We have 12 as of today.
You got 12. You got 63 turkeys to go.
63 turkeys to go.
Turkey. Take your turkey to Brothers and Sisters Unisex Salon on Dewey Avenue.
Yep. Price Right have them for $7.
And to be clear, for charity rules, as the host of this program, I can't endorse any charity, and I can't tell anybody that they should or shouldn't do it. I'm just going to tell you that personally, when I don't have my WXXI hat on, I'll see you there.
Thank you.
That's good stuff.
Appreciate you.
I'm going to take Keith now, and we're going to try it again. Go ahead, Keith.
Now I have AirPods. Does that sound any better?
You sound good, sir. Go ahead.
All right. Very good. Just a comment and a question and a comment. When it comes to giving, money is usually the best, correct?
Money is usually the best. Well, let's ask at least the three here. Daphne, is money usually the best?
For me, it is, yes.
Okay, but for Devin, it's not.
It's not. I'd rather you go out and buy the book bags. It gives you more of a loving feeling that you know you did something good.
Okay, and what about Dan? Money is the best, yes or no? That's exactly what you're looking for.
It's mixed. It depends on the situation.
All right, we'll talk about that more in a second. But often the answer is yes, but not always.
The reason why I'm asking this, at this time of the year, there's a thing called Samaritan's Purse that I've been involved in. I sort of got sucked into it where you get these little, through each church, you get these little shoe boxes and you stuff them full of stuff that fits in the shoebox, and then you put them in a big box that holds about maybe 20 more, 21, and you have to pay $9 just for a shipping and handling of each of those boxes, So each big box costs maybe about $180 to $200 just to get it out of your facility. And I've always said to the people that run this, rather than buy the stuff to put in the shoebox and then pay to ship it, why not just donate money to where it's ultimately going and let an NGO or somebody there who's trusting purchase what the kids or the family members need rather than send them stuff that they may not even need or want.
Yeah, Keith, thank you, Keith. That is a good and an important point. And my guess is, and I'm going to direct this to Daphne because I think it relates more to her organization.
Yeah.
But my guess is most of the time what Keith is suggesting is the best way to give. But you can probably call or get in touch with any organization and ask them directly, right? I mean, if people were to call you and say, what do you need most?
Yeah. And so one of the things is we frequently do get people who want to donate, you know, physical items. But exactly what Keith is saying is that it costs me so much money to get that over mm-hmm. to Kenya that why don't I just buy it there? And not only that, it also stimulates their economy by buying things there. So it is really important. If you want to try to have the most bang for your buck, you probably, in my case, should donate money.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Keith, great point. And good not to assume. Good simply to ask.
Yes.
That's certainly a good way to do it. Let me read an email from Susan in Fairport. Susan says, I'm so excited hearing about all of these charitable organizations on your show. I'm a volunteer regional co-leader for a national giving circle called Dining for Women that supports programs for women and girls in developing countries. There are two chapters in Rochester. There's Rochester and Fairport. Most of our members are 51-year-old suburban women, and we are trying to diversify. That's a very specific age, but that's interesting, Susan. She says, most of our members are 51-year-old suburban women, and we are trying to diversify. We need younger people to join in our mission. Can your panel give any advice on how to engage a younger, diverse membership? Thanks for all what you are all doing. That's from Susan. How to engage a diverse, younger membership here? Anybody?
Well, I'd say for one, with NextGen, we'd love, it's too late for this year, but we'd love to have you put in an application for next year. I mean, that will get you, just by being able to present, get you in front of several hundred of our members. But I think just in general with young professionals, they want to see exactly where that money is going and what it's doing, and they want to hear the story. In kind of preparing for today, I was doing a little bit of reading as well, and a lot of it was talking about making things as easy as possible to give, you know, online and using, you know, crowdfunding and being able to give in smaller increments, because I think that's often a barrier for young people, is they feel like their $25 may not go very far. So that's what crowdfunding offers you, is the ability to really put it together with other people with similar values and similar interests and feel like you're having a greater impact.
That's good stuff here. So with that, thank you, Susan, and good luck to you, by the way. Let's get our only break of the hour. Let's come back here. We're going to talk to Dan about what he's doing. And we're also going to remind you what's coming up on Monday, because as Andrew mentions to Susan, there's a chance in the future to get in front of several hundred people who, you know, even if you're not, I don't know if there's a winner. I guess there's a winner on Monday night.
There's a few grantees that we offer, yeah.
Okay. But even if you're not a winner that night, you are meeting people. You are getting exposed to people who have very charitable ideas and probably a lot of a younger audience as well. So, Susan, we'll give you more details on that when we come back here, and we continue right here on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. We always enjoy this time of year having a chance to hear about what so many outstanding organizations and individuals are doing in terms of charitable efforts, in terms of seeing needs in our community, in terms of helping people in different ways. So Dan Schneiderman is co-chair of Maker Faire Rochester and co-vice dean of the Awesome Foundation. Just opened their Rochester chapter, and they provide $1,000, essentially micro grants in Rochester. Dan described it a little bit earlier, but let's talk about what you need and how you go about making these decisions. Who applies and how this happens here?
So we encourage everyone to apply with whatever project is kind of community based that you think needs to be out here in Rochester, but is still considered awesome. For example, our second grantee we just gave a few weeks ago was to 540 West Main for their civic garden, where they'll be, you know, teaching classes, they'll be giving away vegetables, and in order to finish the garden, he just needed a small amount of money, and so we were able to just give it right back.
Okay, and 540 West Main, Calvin Eaton and the group out there.
Yep.
In fact, I just got a note from Calvin, who's telling us mm-hmm. that this year they've got their own campaign that runs from November 10th through the 27th, and they are trying to expand what they're doing here, and they're trying to get the message out. So it's rally.org/540WMaine if you want to check out more about what they're doing. How many different sort of applications do you get, and how easy was a call on this for 540 West Maine?
So, you know, we're still within our first 6 months of existing officially as a chapter, and we've only accepted 2 projects so far. But just getting the word out, there's been some really standout projects. I mean, 540 West Maine, I mean, that stood right out, that played to our hearts. But it's always a hard decision when it comes down to, like, the top 2 or 3 projects. Still, honestly, just trying to get the word out, saying, hey, please come use us as a resource.
Yeah, and then I also wonder, Dan, how you try to determine the most impactful, not sure that's a word, impactful use of a $1,000 grant. Because as awesome as Wegmans can be, giving them $1,000 probably not going to make it, you know, that's a small drop in a big pond. But 540 West Maine, $1,000 goes a long way.
Yeah, it comes down to a couple of things between, hey, how new are these people? Have people heard of them?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes we're getting individuals who will come to us with these projects that will impact the larger community, and they're not going to get the big grants. They're just starting up. They're just trying to get their feet on the ground. And it also comes back to, are they actually going to go out and be in the community? Are we going to go around Rochester? Are you going to see them even go outside the city and hit up some of the surrounding 9 counties?
All right, I'm looking at our call board here. I'll grab a phone call in a second. Laura, hang there for a second. Dan, where can people learn more if they want to kind of engage with what you guys are doing?
AwesomeRock.org, or you can find us on Facebook and all the other fun social media stuff.
Awesome ROC.
Yes.
AwesomeROC.org. And what's a long-term goal here? What do you like to do with this chapter here?
Honestly, just see more awesome projects, help out a lot of individuals, provide new experiences, try and make Rochester a better place and a much more awesome place.
All right. Dan Schneiderman with the Awesome Foundation just opened their chapter here in Rochester. So a diverse set of options here, and you've got an event coming up on Monday. So Andrew Brady, who is here today representing him on his many hats and many bow ties, he's vice chair for NextGen. And NextGen has an event on Monday that is not just for if you're part of NextGen right now. You can go on Monday night at Jiva, whether you're part of them or not. Tell us what's going on.
Yes, that's correct. So it only costs $100 to become a part of NextGen, to be a member and have your money thrown into the pool that will give out grants. And usually we're able to give out two of those 8 finalists that will present on Monday night. Usually able to give out 3 or 4 grants of, you know, a few $1,000 each. So we'll have organizations maybe that you've heard of and some that you probably haven't. Autism Up has a summer social skills program. The Cracker Box Palace has a steady work program. Deep Arts Inc., Push Physical Theater, St. Michael's Woodshop, the South Wedge Food Program, Third Presbyterian Church has a Math Matters tutoring program. There's a Willow Domestic Violence Center Violence Prevention Education Program. So there will be 8 of those 8 organizations that will be presenting. They'll also have tables around for kind of networking and learning a little bit more about their organization. So if you are a member, you will be able to make a vote on the top organizations that you'd like to support after hearing about them and getting to meet them. But then also, you could just come and maybe put in a membership donation to become a member next year. We actually have 5 matching donations, so you could potentially only pay $50 and get the other $50 matched to become a member for next year. And even if you aren't interested or you're not in the young professional demographic, just to come and learn, like I said, it's one of my favorite days of the year, just to hear about some people, because it's some lesser-known people around Rochester or lesser-known organizations in many cases, you hear about things that are going on that you're just amazed by and so amazed by how passionate these people are. And to be able to help them even in a small way is really meaningful.
So I could go on Monday, not be a part of the organization, sit in the audience, just learn, check it out. If I'm skeptical, I don't got to give. If I'm sitting here thinking, Andrew Brady's got to be a snake oil salesman. No human being could be this nice and in this many places at the same time, this peripatetic guy, and I'm just going to learn. And if you convince me, then maybe I'll join.
Well, yeah. So one of the things that we've over the years, so this is actually going to be our 10th year coming up. And one of the things with NextGen, we really coach people when they're giving their presentations to talk about, you know, exactly where that money is going and to have a really specific program. Because, again, even though we're pooling our money together, our grants are usually in the realm of, you know, $2,500 at most. And so if you have a budget for a giant event that's going to be like $1 million, you know, fundraising thing, not that our money wouldn't be meaningful, but it's just, it's harder to feel like you're contributing in that way. And so when they have a specific program, like some of these math skills programs or whatever kinds of programs that are out there, the Willow has a prevention program as well that they're going to be talking about. It just feels like this is a program that will not happen based on whether or not they get the money. And so that's something where it's really transparent where your dollars are going. And the last thing I just wanted to mention is that this is going to be the fourth year where we actually have a Young Philanthropist of the Year award, and Francis Clement is going to be our honoree. And it's quite apropos, he wasn't able to join us on the program today because he has a board meeting with the Community Foundation. So that is our Young Philanthropist of the Year, and that is something as well that in the future we would love to continue to get more awesome nominations in the future. The last thing that I wanted to say to Susan that I thought of a little bit too late was that in addition to this event, NextGen collaborates with Rochester Young Professionals and the Community Foundation and the United Way, and we actually have a board and volunteering expo every year. And so that was, unfortunately, about a month ago, so you missed it this year, Susan, but we do it every year. And so if you get on the RYP mailing list at r-y-p.org, you'll hear when we're doing it next time. And usually, that's about 100 organizations, nonprofits come, and we usually get 300-plus young professionals who want to get involved because, quite honestly, there's a lot of people like yourself that are saying, we want to reach out to young professionals. I also hear young professionals all the time that raise their hand and say, I want to get involved. How do I get started?
Yep.
And so we try to create the marketplace for that. And so that's an annual event that we have. This was our third annual, so next year will be our fourth. Mm-hmm. It continues to grow. And you'll never find a better opportunity as an organization to meet more young people all in one night. And as a young person, you'll never get more opportunities to test out some organizations rather than sending emails or having to figure it out, all under one roof in one night.
All right, cool stuff. And by the way, I know you're not a snake oil salesman. I will say this, Andrew Brady. You know, I was saying to Nate McMurray, who was running for Chris Collins' congressional seat, that if he were to win, nobody can guarantee there's going to be no scandals. But after Eric Massa and Chris Lee and Chris Collins, I said, whoever's in that seat next, this district cannot handle another scandal. It would be the worst thing for this area. I actually think you having a scandal would rock this area even more because it would be such a surprise. So no scandals. There will never be a scandal. Andrew is actually the real deal. He's quite an inspiring organization. So it's a great opportunity. Monday night, 5:30, Jiva.
You got it.
All right, let's get Laura on the phone next. Laura, go ahead.
Hi, Evan. I work for a local digital marketing company called SiteHub, and I'd like to donate my time to write the content for the Brothers and Sisters website.
Thank you.
And I've given my contact information to the operator, so if you want to contact me about it, I'd be happy to do so at any time, and we'll see what we can do about getting you set up with the website.
All right, Laura, I'm looking at a phone number, so I'm going to pass it on to Devin. Devin, are you interested? Is that something that you'd
Yes, please. Thank you. Thank you very much.
all right, so Laura, appreciate before I let you go, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
I think that is, first of all, it is so cool. I had it in my head that we've got tens of thousands of connections, listeners, and somebody is going to say, I could do that. I'm going to want to do that. It's awesome that it's you. And I just want to ask you why you decided to do it and how you view, you know, sort of charitable contributions yourself.
Well, I consider myself an activist, and I like to help out whenever I can. And the business I work for, SiteHub, is also interested in being a part of the community and doing what we can to improve the Rochester area. So I thought this would be a great opportunity just to be able to work for the betterment of Rochester community.
Awesome. Laura, that is great. Thank you. I'm going to pass along the contact info to Devin, and I'm sure he'll be in touch post-program.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, Laura, that is awesome. What a great community we have. And that's, by the way, a great example, I think, of, you know, I don't know Laura personally. I've never met her. You know, everybody's got a different sort of situation in life financially. Mm-hmm. But many of us have a gift or an opportunity that you can share something that's helpful that goes beyond money. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned, you know, what Devin is doing, providing haircuts for people in homeless shelters, for schools. Because he can. He's a barber. He's good. He's awesome.
We have a free barber apprenticeship for anybody.
Free barber apprenticeship?
Anybody who wants to, you know, find a trade.
See, that's another example.
Come on by.
You know, I saw a story years ago of animal shelters, you know, have to, unfortunately, put down a lot of animals. And that's, for anybody who's got a soft spot for animals in their heart, that's hard to hear. And sometimes you'll see these websites where you see the pets and, you know, frankly, the photography is not very good. It's the same thing as when you're kind of looking for a house and you wonder, like, why did somebody put this picture of this house in the dark, in the snow, as opposed to the next picture you see, and it looks like it's, you know, right out of a catalog. Well, that second house is going to get more phone calls. It's the same thing with pets in these shelters. And you hear about photographers who donate their time, professional mm-hmm. photographers saying, mm-hmm. I want every pet on your website to look awesome and perfect and well shot and well lit. That's something that you can do. Mm-hmm. There's so many different things. And I just think Laura's phone call is a great example of that. So I'm really appreciative of that, Laura. Thank you very much. We've got a few minutes left here. And so I want to ask our guests to share with our audience how they view sort of this community. And I want to try to be realistic here. And Andrew, I'm going to start with you. And I'm going to ask you to be as realistic as you can, because every community wants to think we're the most charitable, we're the most giving. Mm-hmm. I do think my experience in Rochester is that we're wonderful. I think a lot of communities are. I don't know how these things compete. But how do you see the sort of charitable landscape, and particularly in your age cohort here?
Well, you asked me to be objective, and I know we're talking yesterday. Well, not we, but you were on. We were talking yesterday about facts and opinions, and so I actually saw a fact that just yesterday, or maybe last night, where it said that Rochester, in terms of volunteering, was number two, mm-hmm. and so that says a lot. That's I don't know exactly the methodology that they used.
Per capita volunteering, Rochester is number two in the country. Juan Vazquez's story on WXXI might be where you
yes,
saw it.
Yes, it is. Exactly. It is. It was getting passed around, so it was a good one, right? So there are some objective measures, but also I really just want to encourage people to expand again the way that they're thinking about giving back. If you don't have a ton of money for a philanthropic donation, think about maybe giving money to Daphne and having that get pooled up with other people, and how far your money might go elsewhere. Or maybe you can buy a turkey for Devin, or maybe you can contribute to the awesome foundation, or you can be a part of NextGen for a relatively low amount. But if even that's too much, just be really conscious about the way that you're spending your money that you're going to be spending anyways, right? Mm-hmm. Like, go to Devin's salon. If you are going to have to buy a haircut anyways, go to a salon that really has an alignment with your values. And so I think that we can all, by being a little bit more conscious and taking a little bit more time, really find ways to give back no matter what our financial situation. Or, you know, as some people have called in, there's things you can do that have nothing to do with money as well. So I don't want to forget about that either.
Yeah, it's a great point. And finding businesses that align with your values is, I think, one thing that is getting easier to do, because mm-hmm. you can communicate via social media. It's a lot easier to find out information. Mm-hmm. And now you can put your dollars where your values go easier than ever. And that is, that aligns with what Andrew's group with Conscious Capitalism does. And it's so important. Dan, how do you view Rochester, and what kind of reception are you feeling?
I'm feeling really hopeful. I mean, like we've just been saying, yes, it's not always financial. I'm seeing more and more people go out and either lend a helping hand, or the thing I've been personally seeing is people building things for others. I've just recently been working with a high school in the Southern Tier who's taken one of their CNC machines, taking some wood, and they're building a pop-up shelter that's being installed in Tent City this Friday. Mm-hmm. Mm. Or I'm seeing the cosplay community start to come together and say, hey, let's work on this project called Magic Wheelchair, where we make costumes for kids in wheelchairs. Mm-hmm. And the first second I said, hey, we should start doing this here in Rochester, I got a few people saying, yes, what's the next step?
That's awesome. I love stories like that. I hope it's putting a hop in everybody's step this afternoon. Daphne, 30 seconds. How do you view that?
I think that Rochester is an incredibly giving community, but I do think that the volunteerism is exceptional. I think the place that there is a little bit lacking is the international aspect to it. Rochester is a very local giving community, but in terms of volunteerism, literally everyone that works for me is volunteer, and they're all from either U of R or RIT, and we've done some really incredible things with just volunteering.
Wow. Devin.
I think it depends on what community that you you're in, because although a lot of people in my community can't give financially, I think time will be a lot. Also, aligning up with businesses that is for the betterment of you. I feel like that we lack to pick that up, that that ideology that we should support. I feel like we have a heart of a disease of the heart where we'll love anybody who comes in except ourselves. We'll support every other business but ourselves, and I think that's where we really have to take a look at.
Well, I'll see you there on Dewey.
Yes, thank you. Appreciate
it. And I don't have a whole lot of hair left.
Thank you, Laura. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of hair left, but maybe I'll come for the next haircut there.
Yeah, please, please, please.
While I still need it, please, before I go to the razor. Devin Reynolds is the owner of Brothers and Sisters Unisex Salon, the founder of Brothers and Sisters Community University. And Devin, thank you.
Thank you. Great having you here. Thank you.
Our thanks to Dan Schneiderman from the Awesome Foundation. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks.
Our thanks to Daphne Pariser from Humans for Education. Great having you. Thank you.
Thanks.
And Andrew Brady, the ubiquitous Andrew Brady, co-founder and co-chair of Conscious Capitalism Rock and vice chair for NextGen. Have a great event on Monday at Jiva at 5:30. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
And you can meet him there. It's a great opportunity. Open up to the public. Check it out. Thanks to John Andrus, engineering, Megan Mack producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow.